Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
There's something unique about pheasant season in South Dakota. It's the plains and the people, the action and relaxing. It's black coffee in the morning and colder drinks when the day's done. South Dakota hunts are doing what you love most with the people you love best. Out here in the finest pheasant habitat on planet Earth. Enter for a chance to win a South Dakota hunt for you and your crew, plus free Shields gear at huntthegreatestsd.com.
Good morning. Today is September 12th, 2021. May your coffee be strong, your morning be relaxing, and your knowledge be broadened. I am Blois Olson, and welcome to the first edition of Sunday Brew here on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're going to dive into the news of the week. We're going to take a look ahead. But if you have thoughts, ideas, feel free to text them to 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. I'll take a look. We'll incorporate them into the future shows. Show's going to work like this. We're going to talk about the issues of the week. We're going to look ahead to the next week. So we'll have the first cup with John Choi. The second cup is going to come with Jeremy Miller, the new Republican leader. And then we're going to have a little clatch at the end. And joining us this week will be Tori Van Oot from Axios and Ricardo Lopez from Minnesota's Reformer. It was obviously a busy week in Minnesota politics with Paul Gazelka entering the governor's race. No deal on the COVID emergency relief for workers. Amy Klobuchar's disclosure that she has been treated for breast cancer. And as we look ahead, DFLers will pick a new leader in the Senate on Monday. And Governor Walz is expected to try to find a deal on the COVID relief later next week. When we come back, the first cup with John Choi on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Welcome back to Sunday Brew. I'm Blois Olson. And in our first cup today, we're going to talk to Ramsey County Attorney John Choi. He had a major announcement this week, and I want to dive a little deeper and understand the background, who he made this announcement with, and frankly, understand where you're going with these decisions, because public safety is not just a discussion point for this election year. I think it's going to be a discussion point in the next legislative session. It'll be a discussion point next year. So we've known each other a long time. Ramsey County Attorney John Choi, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Blois, thanks so much for having me on your show and giving me an opportunity to speak directly to the people of our state.
So you made a decision in conjunction with law enforcement, chiefs of police in Ramsey County, about reducing kind of traffic stops or searches during traffic stops that don't pose a risk to public safety. Give an idea, because I think the headlines and the social media buzz and, of course, the political point scoring, you know, it kind of frames it in many different ways. If you're explaining this to somebody in a coffee shop in St. Paul, tell me how you are explaining it and tell me what you're trying to achieve with this new policy.
Yeah, thank you, Blois. And I appreciate the ability to actually have a more thoughtful, in-depth conversation that I think sometimes social media, you know, can't provide. And I'll start with by saying this, that one of the things I don't like about my community and the state that I live in right now is that I feel like we're so fractured and divided. And we want to win arguments or want to stand in on a certain perspective. And I also think that the way that politics is right now in our community, it's there's incentives to actually try to divide us as people, as Minnesotans. And so this opportunity, I think, is really important because I think in many ways we can have maybe visceral reactions to what we hear and see when we get little tidbits and sound bites. But the work that we're trying to do, and I want to make this also clear, that it's in collaboration with the community that I serve in Ramsey County and with law enforcement. It's no secret that for the past year, I have been talking with my law enforcement chiefs about the fact that I feel like as the prosecutor, that if I continue to prosecute cases that come to my desk, where they are the product of some low-level equipment violation, right? Because oftentimes the way that policing works out in this state and across the country and is that police will see something that seems kind of suspicious, but they have absolutely no reason to pull the person over. But if they can justify that pulling over of the motorist because of some equipment violation, they will do that. And oftentimes they will seek maybe a further investigation. And sometimes they'll ask for consent to search the vehicle. Now, they do that because in some instances, we know that sometimes like contraband, so the contraband would be like drugs.
Yep.
Or somebody who should not be in possession of a handgun is found, right? And I will be the first to admit that I used to believe that that type of policing had great public safety value because we could recover the illegal contraband, right? And keep our community safe. But as we have learned more and more about the data and the research, and there's so much of it, if I encourage your listeners to just Google pretextual traffic stops, then they'll see that there's a plethora of research and data that have been done throughout this country and even here in the state of Minnesota. But the truth is that this type of policing only yields about 2% of actual recovery of some form of contraband, right? And so the hit rate or the success rate is very, very small.
Yeah.
And so we've justified this type of policing. And I want to also make it clear that it's legal. The Supreme Court has said that you can do this, right? But at the same time, this type of policing has led to massive disparity in my community. And it's no different across the country, but it's for African-American motorists are four times more likely to be subject to this type of police practice, right? And so what it has done is that over generations and decades, it's breeded lots of mistrust in police. It's generated, I think, no public safety value other than one of the isolated incidents where they might find something, but it's not doing it. So if we think about it in the context of just like the common conversations that we're having, I mean, would we ever allow for a vaccination for COVID if 2% of the subjects of the clinical trial had no side effects, but 98% had very serious side effects, right? And I think we haven't been listening to the perspectives of those individuals and communities that have been subject to that.
Right.
So that's what we're trying to accomplish, to say that this is now disfavored, that we want to figure out a different way. And I think there are different ways to do this. And so what we're trying to do is just get a different and better version of what public safety should look like in my community. And I also think it's a great model of collaboration, working with community philanthropy and community and police and prosecutor to come up with different solutions.
John Choi is my guest here on Sunday Brew. During the first cup here, we're talking about his announcement this week about traffic stops. You bring up contraband and guns. There's obviously a significant gun violence issue in your community, in my community, throughout the Twin Cities right now. And so, give an example of, so as I look at your policy memo here, it says, if it's only about the product of a non-public safety traffic stop, or the result of searching the vehicle is based solely on consent without any articulatable suspicion. So if you suspect somebody, let's just say somebody has a license plate violation or they're speeding, and then, you know, the officer runs their plates and maybe there is a felony or maybe there is, you know, a warrant. That doesn't, you're not excluding that being the opportunity to search, correct?
No, not at all. In fact, that would be very much outside of our policy. In the case that you ran a plate, it's a stolen car or there are no plates on the car.
Right.
That's not included in our policy. What we're talking about are one brake light out, not both. You know, one headlight out, not both. We're talking about a cracked windshield that doesn't isn't like so cracked that it's a public safety type of issue, right? And we also have a public safety exception. So in case something does fall within this policy, right? And I know that the expectations of our community would be that we would charge that case.
Yeah.
We will. And so every good rule needs to have an exception. And then more importantly, the police are with me on this. The largest jurisdiction in my community, the second largest jurisdiction, is already has their policy.
Right.
So they're saying out loud to their officers, stop doing this, right? I don't want you to do this, right? And so these types of cases, first of all, shouldn't be coming to my office to begin with, but because we're working in collaboration.
You understand politics. You've been around it a long time. You talk about the divide. But you also, you know, you held a major news conference about 2% of traffic stops that yield this and when 98% don't. Is it about a message to the community that this is a step? And how big of a step is this from a policy perspective? And did you think about the politics before you made the announcement?
Yeah, I absolutely knew that this would engender strong feelings and conversations really on both sides. I mean, we've been flooded with texts and emails from two very different perspectives. Some who are saying this is so heartwarming and heartfelt that they never felt like something like this would ever happen or someone would actually start talking about this out loud and starting this conversation. And of course, I've gotten numerous emails for me to immediately resign and saying that it's shameful that you're the county attorney because you're not enforcing the laws that the legislature has duly enacted, right?
Yep.
So I knew that going into this, but leadership is many times about making hard, hard decisions. And so what I've been, I guess what I'm telling, I'm the face of all of this, even though I've got collaborators and supporters in law enforcement, is that I'm saying that we've got to take a different path. That, you know, the path that we were on was maybe to go around the mountain. But I'm convinced that if we take that path, there's danger ahead. Instead, that I'm saying that we need to actually climb the mountain and we need to come back down the other side to get to where we need to have a better version of justice and public safety. I believe that politicians do things right. They can manage the conversation, seek ways to get reelected, but leaders will always do the right thing. And the way that I look at this is that, you know, I've been in office now for more than a decade, right?
Yep.
And quite frankly, I want to be able to do right by my community, to be able to look at myself in the mirror and to know that I am doing things that enhance our quality of justice for everybody in our community. And a big part of me speaking up, standing up and saying this out loud and trying to figure out a way to bring people together like police and community is that someone needs to stand up and say these things. Nobody does in our society. If I had a dime for every time somebody whispered something in my ear but couldn't say it out loud,
you're
a very, very rich man. And so what we need to do is we need to have courage. We need to stand up for the things that need to change. We need to delve deep into these hard, hard conversations and bring people along like I have done here in Ramsey County to bring our community together. I know that there are detractors of this, right? But there's also a lot of people that see the vision and the value of bringing together law enforcement and community. That's what we need to change. We can't continue down this path of mistrust and all of that. So,
John, as we kind of wrap this up, one of the things that your office is responsible for, or you know, the entire criminal justice system, is the sense that when there are serious crimes, it seems as though either violent criminals are not being held without bail, or they're being bailed out and a judge is releasing them earlier. I know that's not directly related to this, but in the, you know, I think everybody kind of looks at the entire environment we're in right now about crime and criminal justice. And so you talk about traffic stops and there's a big announcement, but I think there's a lot of questions about where we're headed overall with violent criminals, with repeat offenders on gun crimes. Is there any sense that there needs to be not just rehabilitation in the community, not just second chances, but more accountability because people are getting out or they seem to be committing crimes more frequently?
Absolutely. And a big part of the solution is also incapacitation, which involves jail and prison, right? Yep. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to focus police and prosecutor resources on those types of offenses. But we have to also keep in mind this past year and the past maybe 2 years, actually, with the pandemic is a misnomer. And this is not just here in the state of Minnesota, but all over the country. You know, we've been experiencing higher rates of crime and repetitive type of behavior. But we also have to keep it in context that we are in the midst of a pandemic that creates a whole bunch of other social conditions where I think a lot of that is being driven by that. But also, too, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what actually happens in the justice system, and that there's a belief that somehow that based upon what happens there, that public safety is actually delivered. You know, a lot of the repeat offenders that we have in my community, as well as in Hennepin County, it's interesting because if you start delving into why some of these people were released, why they were released, they posted cash bail of like $75,000 and $40,000 in the wake of George Floyd. An organization,
or somebody did it on their behalf.
Right. In the wake of George Floyd, an organization called the Minnesota Freedom Fund, right?
Yeah.
Utilized cash bail because they raised $36 million.
Right.
And so I think it also exposes the ineffectiveness of our cash bail system. That in and of itself needs to be reformed, that somehow you have the dough, you can get out. And of course, the Freedom Fund did this because they wanted to expose this really inequitable and ineffective system. And so we need to build, make improvements in that area. But that takes the legislature to do something about it, but they can.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Continue to fail in that.
Got it. Well, John Choi, thanks for joining me on Sunday Brew. We'll talk down the line, and best of luck and enjoy your fall.
Hey, thanks so much, Blois. Take care.
Sounds good. When we come back, a conversation with new Republican leader Jeremy Miller. He's recently been elected Senate leader for Republicans. He'll likely be the next majority leader when the Senate convenes. Here on Sunday Brew on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Brew. I'm Blois Olson. For Cup 2 today, we are joined by Senator Jeremy Miller. He was elected this week by his colleagues to be the new Republican leader. When the whole Senate convenes, he'll be likely elected majority leader. Senator Miller, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Blois. Thank you so much for having me. It's a great honor to be here.
Well, you know, you've been Senate president for a while. You've been in the Senate a couple terms now. What is it that kind of drove you to want to lead your caucus and be the most visible Republican in the state right now?
Well, it is a little different than what I normally do. I'm more of a behind the scenes guy, trying to build bridges and create relationships to get good things done for the people of the state of Minnesota. There is a tremendous amount of talent in the Senate Republican caucus. So this scrap recycler from Winona is not the only one that was qualified for the job. But I'm honored that my colleagues selected me to be the next majority leader. And what I hope to do, Blois, is not only unite our caucus, but really work together with colleagues on both sides of the aisle in the House, in the Senate, to really get good things done for the people of Minnesota. That's what I've been working on for my 11 years in the Senate, going on 12, and that's what I hope to accomplish as the Senate Majority Leader.
You will serve alongside in your district Democrat Gene Pawlowski. Obviously, you've probably had to work together on some projects for Southeastern Minnesota. Are there things that that relationship has taught you or that you hope to bring to kind of the statewide perspective?
Representative Gene Pawlowski is a good friend and has been a mentor of mine, along with a few other members of the legislature. We've worked together on many issues here locally. The Winona community is going to be very well represented in the legislature with the new majority leader and one of the longest serving House members in Representative Pawlowski. But yes, his mentorship and his friendship has certainly helped me become the legislator I am.
You talk about working together, but obviously just the tone and tenor of the country, the tone and tenor of the state, the headlines are often driven by partisanship and divide, even on things like a pandemic. Where are some common themes or common issues that you think you could step forward and kind of even call the governor and say, here's something we need to work together on? And, you know, he used to represent the first district, so he knows Winona well.
So the extreme divisiveness in politics is my biggest frustration at the Capitol. It seems to get worse every year. And Blois, it really doesn't have to be that way. There's areas of disagreement. There's always going to be areas of disagreement in politics, just like everything else. After all, we live in a democracy. But working through those disagreements doesn't have to be disrespectful. It can be done in a honest and respectful manner. That's what I hope to accomplish as the new Senate Majority Leader. Starting off, I think the first thing we need to do is find a solution on the eligibility requirements for the frontline worker pay bonuses. My understanding is the working group is very close to an agreement. I hope that working group can reach agreement as quickly as possible. We can go into a special session and get that money out to those frontline workers as quickly as possible. Additionally, bonding is definitely an area that we can work together on and find a solution. That'll be one of the main issues going into the 2022 legislative session. And another area, Blois, that I hope we can work together is finding a solution to the increasing crime rates in the state. This is an issue that we're hearing from people all across the state of Minnesota. They have serious concerns about crime rates increasing in Minnesota. And I feel that we need to work together and find a way to lower those crime rates, give law enforcement the support they need to hold unlawful individuals accountable for their actions. And it doesn't have to be a divisive issue. It can be an issue that we can work together on. And I hope that is an area for the sake of the people in Minnesota that we can work together on.
Guest this morning is Jeremy Miller. He's the new Republican leader in the Minnesota Senate. And as we're talking here on Sunday Brew, and he brought up COVID relief and kind of working across the aisle. Two last questions here, Senator. Have you talked to the governor yet? And then do you think there's any chance that the COVID relief for workers pool of money grows from $250 million to a higher number?
I have not talked to the governor yet, but his office did reach out and we have a call scheduled. Speaker Hortman was one of the first people to reach out to congratulate me, and I have a good friendship and relationship with Speaker Hortman. So I am looking forward to working together with her. As far as the $250 million, if there is an appetite to grow that, it's too early to say. But I think at this point in time, we need to focus on that $250 million, which has already been appropriated in a bipartisan manner with strong support in the House and the Senate, Democrats and Republicans. So that's where the focus needs to be right now.
Sounds good. Because people are just getting to know you and it's Sunday morning. How do you spend your Sunday mornings in Winona?
Well, our Sunday mornings start out usually by going to church with my wife and my three boys. And this Sunday, it's going to include watching the Minnesota Vikings. I'm a huge football fan, both Vikings and Minnesota Golden Gophers, as well as the Winona State Warriors. So weekends are filled with football. My oldest son, a fourth grader, just started youth tackle football, and I'm helping coach his team. And my other two boys are playing soccer. So this weekend we'll have a football game and a soccer tournament in addition to everything else that's going on.
All right. So what's your prediction on the Vikings record this year, Senator?
I believe the Vikings are going to go 10-7 this year. 10-7.
No, I think it's 10-7. I think there are 17 games this year.
17 weeks, but 16 games with the bye.
So we'll put
they're
it
gonna
at
win 10 games this year.
You're going to win 10 games.
They're going to win 10 games this year.
Sounds great. Senator Miller, thanks for joining us on Sunday Brew.
Thank you so much for having me.
When we come back, the first coffee clatch with Tori Van Oot of Axios and Ricardo Lopez of The Reformer. I'm Blois Olson on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back. It's the last part of more Sunday Brew here on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm Blois Olson. Thanks for tuning in this week. You can follow me at Blois Olson on Twitter, or you can sign up for any of the newsletters at fluence-newsletters.com. And this last part, I think, is going to be the most fun part of Sunday Brew. And we're going to call it the clatch, a little coffee clatch here on a Sunday morning. Joining me now, Ricardo Lopez from The Reformer and Tori Van Oot from Axios Minnesota. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, boys.
No problem. So let's start with the kind of raw politics of the week. Republicans chose Jeremy Miller. He was just on. He's been kind of behind the scenes. He's younger. He's from southern Minnesota. When we talk about kind of Democrats and Republicans battling over the northeastern Minnesota. Ricardo, any early impressions of Jeremy Miller or any insight into kind of the battle within the caucus that he won?
Well, you know, I think Jeremy Miller was seen as a kind of front runner for the position, you know, kind of as soon as Gazelka was making it clear who's going to be running for governor. I think what's interesting about Jeremy Miller is that he is, you know, was formerly co-chair of the Purple Caucus in the Senate or in the legislature, you know, mix of DFL, GOP legislators who really wanted to be able to work and advance legislation that had both DFL and GOP support. So he's not necessarily representative of sort of this base of Republicans who are really into, conflict and really fighting back against Democrats. And I think it's going to represent a pretty fresh start for relationships with the governor, which had been really, really strained between Gazelka, former Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, and the governor, especially over the firing of his commissioners over ideological differences.
Tori, you've watched Gazelka, you watched his launch this week. Any kind of big contrast you see between his style and Jeremy Miller or, you know, kind of the new Republican face in Minnesota?
You know, I think we'll see. I mean, Miller is, I think Ricardo just mentioned, you know, he's a pretty young guy. If you look back at Gazelka's time as leader, you know, despite big ideological differences, he did develop a quite strong working relationship with House Speaker Melissa Hortman as well. And Miller says that he has, you know, a good relationship with her so far. The two had actually talked. She was one of his first kind of congratulations texts, he said. And I think it's to be seen, and we'll see pretty quickly with a potential special session coming up, you know, how fast they can build up that negotiation rapport and relationship, and what it means for deal making in the legislature come next year when we still have a divided legislature.
The first big story of next week or tomorrow is going to be who DFLers pick. Ricardo, you've been watching this race closely. We had people jump in, jump out of the race to be the DFL leader in the Senate. What's your sense of kind of where, what are the issues amongst members, and how do you kind of size up that race right now?
Yeah, so it's going to be, I mean, it's really hard to tell who right now has the support to be the next minority leader in the Senate DFL caucus. I mean, there are two declared candidates, Senator Melissa Franzen from Medina and Senator Nick Frenz from North Mankato. There's also chatter of potentially a dark horse candidate who hasn't declared, but I know people are looking to a potential candidate in Senator Kari Dietzick from Northeast Minneapolis, kind of seen as a workhorse in the Senate, has a pretty strong reputation. But as I was talking with folks, you know, the knock against Senator Melissa Franzen is that she was the first senator out of the gate to criticize Senator Susan Kent's handling of a sexual harassment complaint that our outlet, broke a couple, a few weeks ago. And so that was seen as kind of disloyal to the caucus because, you know, a lot of the members are going to want a leader who puts the caucus first. And so that wasn't seen as necessarily a good thing. And also she resigned her leadership position over the handling of that because she felt like she'd been cut out. And Senator Nick Frenz, the knock against him is that some of the more progressive members might not be willing to support his candidacy because he's definitely a bit more of a moderate. So, with so many different types of factions in the caucus, it's going to be hard to get consensus. And so that's why Senator Dietzig is seen as a potential unifier.
And Blois, just jumping in here to kind of zoom out on why this is such an important time for both caucuses to be going through leadership shifts. I mean, we're going into the midterms here. Not so long. The election may seem like far away, but it's really not. And we're in the middle of a redistricting process. Of course, that'll probably end up being the lines being drawn by the courts. But, you know, these new leaders need to jump right in. They need to be able to be raising money for the caucus, right? That's something that Gazelka was fairly good at. And recruiting candidates, getting ready to defend their candidates, especially on the Republican side in these suburban districts. In elections that were decided by very narrow margins last time. And so it's a pretty big deal that both caucuses in the Senate with such a narrow margin and divide there are changing leaders at this time.
No, I totally agree, Tori. I mean, I think that is the fascinating thing is that leaders do come and go, but they usually don't leave right before a massive election because Minnesota's tradition is and history is that this first election, the first election after a census kind of sets the majority for the next 10 years, especially in the Minnesota Senate for the last 20 years. So we will watch that closely. Tori, you guys had some polling numbers at Axios Twin Cities this week. Some of them were political. Some of them were about kind of Minnesota personalities and friendships. What did the political ones say first?
The political one was reflecting one of the biggest debates right now, which is, of course, masks in schools and how people are feeling about back to schools. Most schools are now back in session, and our poll was a national poll that actually also had some state polling, including on Minnesota. And we found that a majority of Minnesotans are worried that this back to school season is going to result in another surge of COVID cases, or at the very least, you know, the current rise, elevated case count not going down. And our poll also captured the divide over masks. So, you know, a majority of Minnesota parents who we polled do support masks in schools. Another 9% or so support them for folks who are unvaccinated in schools. But about 38% of those we polled opposed masks in schools. And that was actually higher than some of the more conservative states that have like banned mask mandates or have higher case counts right now. So that was pretty interesting. And I think it just, you know, the big picture here is it captures how this is a really anxiety-driven, intense time as we're heading back to school, right? Everybody's so excited to get kids back into the classroom, be done hopefully for now with distance learning, but there's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of political tension and a lot of a lot of parents are concerned about how this is going to go and what it's going to mean for their kids and themselves, right? If there are classroom disruptions.
Ricardo, it's schools isn't the only part of kind of the divide. MinnPost had a poll out this week that showed the gap between Greater Minnesota and the metro on key issues is even wider. And then on Friday, gubernatorial candidate Scott Jensen came out with a pretty aggressive video about civil disobedience. He suggests that, you know, we have to reject vaccine passports, which, by the way, haven't even been offered, you know, or passed or suggested by anybody. Where do you see kind of the politicization of the pandemic as it kind of shapes up what we're looking ahead at the next few months?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we have to remember that right now what's happening on the Republican side is they're all running, you know, for the endorsement of Republican delegates. And those are sort of the most fervent activists in the party. And so a lot of the positions that some of these candidates will stake out, they'll be trying to appeal to them because they want that nomination. And a few of them might not be, abiding by the endorsement. So they'll go to the primary. But I think, you know, what their statements reflect is the sentiment of sort of the smaller group of people, right? Because we have such broad rates of vaccination across Minnesota, but it's of course geographical. We see declining, you know, vaccination rates in a lot more Republican counties and districts in the state. So, I mean, I think we'll see this happening for the next several months. The politicization of vaccines and the COVID response, you know, is here to stay, but we'll see what the message shifts to once we are in the general election and the choice is really narrow here.
As I found it kind of notable that Gazelka has said once or twice, a couple times leading up to his run, and then this week again, that you know, he thinks public safety and crime are going to be bigger issues come actual November of next year versus COVID. And, you know, he did say at his, he opposes, you know, like he says, vaccine mandates, but he was pretty clear in his announcement and in his little scrum with reporters and saying, you know, I've been vaccinated, you know, I encourage people to get vaccinated, which is a little bit different, you know, rhetoric than you hear from Jensen, for example.
Yep. So Tori, last item for you is this: in the same poll, you polled why Minnesotans don't invite non-Minnesotans who move here over for dinner. And since you're both non-native Minnesotans, you're always welcome here for dinner as a native Minnesotan. I think, you know, I think it's important that we all get together, you know, and we can do it outside. I'm vaccinated. We can do it in safe manner as soon as you want. But Tori, this is a real thing that I hear from businesses. I hear from people who move here. So what does the poll say about kind of this chilly Minnesota chill that they put on non-natives?
Right. Minnesota nice. So this is actually an informal survey we did with our Axios Twin Cities newsletter readers. And, you know, we found that 7 in 10 people who responded said that it's hard to make friends in the Twin Cities. And, you know, people who were from Minnesota reported having more friends who are from Minnesota than people who are not from Minnesota who are transplants. Right. I can say personally, my husband is from Minnesota. He's from Lewis Park. He was away for a long time before we came back in 2017. But almost all of my close friends since moving here are fellow transplants. And I remarked in our newsletter that, you know, in 4 years, almost 4 years, I can count on one hand the number of Native Minnesotans who have invited me into their home. And we host, so it's not like we're not. So it is kind of funny. And I don't know, maybe you can tell us, boys, like what is driving this? People just have enough friends, don't like outsiders. It's not as much of a revolving door city like DC or New York or other places might be. But I think we kind of captured something in the zeitgeist here because we got a lot of feedback from people, their own stories of making friends or struggling to make friends.
You know, I just think that people who are from Minnesota come back, like your husband, right? And then they kind of create their bubble. When I came back, I created a totally different bubble when I moved back here than my high school bubble or something like that. And then now I would say that it's my community or my neighborhood. And if somebody's not from here, then it's there. And professionally, but you know, it's a real thing. Ricardo, I find this fascinating because you were here, you left, and then you chose to come back. So there must be something about Minnesota that, you know,
yeah, I mean,
you wanted to come back for.
I was going to say, what's interesting is that, you know, I interned here at the Pioneer Press in 2010 for summer and just like fell in love with the place, you know, loved so many things about the Twin Cities. And so that's why I ended up coming back in 2014. My advantage was that I had an in that one of my best friends was originally from Minnesota and went to college in McAllister. So when I moved back, you know, he introduced me to a bunch of people. But my, you know, and for a while, my circle of friends were transplants. But I think my advice to people who aren't from here, who are like really, you know, astounded at some of the things, you know, some of the social behaviors of, of Minnesotans, is you kind of have to latch on, right? It's just like, you know, it'll be uncomfortable to put yourself out there in such a way. But it takes some time. And you know, there are things that read very cold and standoffish about Minnesotans, but, you know, they're all about sort of respecting your space and giving you, you know, sort of privacy, which is kind of strange. But, you know, I will say that people like myself end up staying for a number of reasons. And I remember a survey done by one of the organizations in town that found that, you know, professionals, you know, people cycle in here for 2-3 years for jobs with any of the big companies here and end up leaving for these reasons, but they end up staying if they meet somebody, get married, have kids, they stay, right? And so it's that quality of life that people like, and that's, you know, that's one of the big reasons I'm here.
Well, I will say this. I would say this as we wrap here. I've been accused of not being very Minnesotan because I'm a Scandinavian who says what I think now and then. And so just know that we all have to bridge the fine line. Ricardo Lopez, Tori Venu, where can people find you, Tori, on social and Ricardo on Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me at Tori Vanute on Twitter, and you can sign up for our newsletter at axios.com/twin-cities. You'll find it there. And we're a free daily newsletter covering, we're Monday through Friday, covering all the news in the Twin Cities.
Ricardo, where can people find you?
People can follow me on Twitter. It's at RLJourno, JOURNO. And you can read The Reformer at MinnesotaReformer.com and sign up for our newsletter there, The Daily Reformer, and follow our podcast too.
Sounds great. Hey guys, thanks for joining me on the first Sunday Brew. For listeners, thank you. Shoot me a note, shoot me a tweet. Let me know what you think about the first episode here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Keeping up with the flood of news every single day can be quite stressful. There is climate change happening. There's the pandemic, labor movements, Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend. Hi, I am Gideon Resnick, host of Crooked Media's What a Day. Each week, Travelle Anderson, Priyanka Arabindi, Josie Duffy, Rice, and I are going to break down the biggest news stories of the day in a way that hopefully doesn't always make you want to cry. New episodes of What a Day drop every weekday at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's something unique about pheasant season in South Dakota. It's the plains and the people, the action and relaxing. It's black coffee in the morning and colder drinks when the day's done. South Dakota hunts are doing what you love most with the people you love best. Out here in the finest pheasant habitat on planet Earth. Enter for a chance to win a South Dakota hunt for you and your crew, plus free Shields gear at huntthegreatestsd.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.